This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by Farrah.com. There is a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending in Seattle?
A Seattle cop is suing the city in a $10 million claim for having him work at a dangerous homeless encampment that he believes got him sick. I talked about this story about a couple, 3 months ago. Officials ended up finding a dangerous level of PCBs at a homeless encampment in Seattle. And cops had to go there and clean it up and do their general policing. And we ended up exposing Officer Timothy Gifford to the toxins, and he says he got sick as a result. According to the lawsuit, he wasn't given protective equipment. He wasn't given the training that's necessary to handle situations like this. And says at least 59 other staffers were in the exact same position as he was. We don't know how many, if any, of them got sick. But according to the court filing, Officer Gifford also contends that prior to sweeping the camp, the city never adequately evaluated the site. This is according to Como News, who spoke with Erin Goodman, the executive director of the SoDo Business Improvement Area, and she says these are unsafe places for anybody to be in.
This is a very, very serious environmental hazard. I believe we're at the point where the city should consider these as hazardous sites and prepare their employees appropriately. I think we need to accept the fact that the unsheltered encampments and RV encampments are unsafe and unsanitary for all.
Oh, but Shama Sawant doesn't want us to do any of the sweep. She wants them to stay there, and she thinks that all of a sudden giving them some trash bins or a porta potty is going to switch things up. It's going to make these spots safer. They will not. These people are living in abject filth. And it's one thing to tell them, hey, we're just not going to take care of you. But it's then another thing to take a city employee that you should be responsible for, that you should treat reasonably and with respect, telling them, oh, why don't you go in there and clean it up? And that, but you know, I guess here's some gloves, I guess. You got good boots. You got boots that won't step on any needles. Okay, cool. Just go out there. You're putting people's lives on the line when you do this. Now, I don't know if they're going to be able to prove that the toxicity of these PCBs at this particular encampment was directly responsible for the officer's illness. But you know what? I hope he wins. I hope every one of those 59 decide to step up and sue as well, because the fact of the matter is we're in this position because the city isn't being pressured enough into changing the way they deal with this problem. It happens all the time, this kind of nonsense. I went on a sweep with the navigation team. I did a ride-along, and I was there at one of the sites. It was in SoDo. It was disgusting. It was absolutely disgusting. And they're cleaning this up. And if they truly don't have the special training that's necessary to be in positions where you're wandering around human waste and use needles, that seems problematic to me. Shocking that people don't want to work for the SPD in this environment, in this city. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Wait, what?
The problems that we have in the Seattle area and in some parts across Western Washington, they tend to pop up in other cities that are quote-unquote progressive. You've got horrible situations in Los Angeles, in New York, in Portland, and also in San Francisco, where a store owner, his name is Giles DeSauniers, he was bitten by another person because of the out-of-control issues that are facing them. He was on with Tucker Carlson yesterday.
The last event, it was a guy who came in, and we asked him to leave, and he left, and he came back 15 minutes later to harass the employee. And,
sound familiar?
He hit somebody, and it got really violent. Some of the staff subdued him, and we tried to call the police to have them intervene and arrest him. And in the process, he decided to bite me. And one of the statements he made was, why are you even calling the police? They're not going to do anything. They're just going to let me go.
So again, sound familiar? Is this what we're hearing here in the Seattle area? Not because of the police's fault, but because of the city's fault?
And so I said, no, this time I'm going to place you under citizen's arrest, and I'm going to wait for the police to arrive. And he was taken away. And it happened 4 months before as well. A woman came in who was drugged out, who wasn't making any sense. We just wanted her to exit the store, and she just grabbed my arm and bit on it and dropped her weight. And I was finally able to free my arm, and I took her out of the store, and I forgot about it.
Now, the fact of the matter is, if I didn't tell you that was in San Francisco, you could have easily said it's happening in Seattle or Olympia. or Tacoma or a whole bunch of other places across this country that are led by people who want to pretend that they're progressive and compassionate towards people who are living out on the streets. They say, you know, these are human beings. We need to help them by letting them do this kind of dangerous behavior. When will this country wake up? Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Celebrity news.
I mean, is he a celebrity?
He's a celebrity to me. That man is a hero.
Yeah.
Local hero.
Benicio Bryant, 15 years old. He's from Maple Valley. He caught the hearts and the ears, I guess, of the country as he's competing on America's Got Talent. He did a duet last night, which, if I'm being totally honest, I really don't like this song or this particular performance. He's so much better than that, but that's what he performed yesterday, and unfortunately, he did not finish in the top five of the reality show. This is where I get a little bit upset, because when I tell you who won, I think most people, regardless of the person's talent, and he's clearly talented, you're going to say, okay, you're not going to be able to beat this story.
100%.
Yeah.
No chance.
Cody Lee won. He's got autism, and he's blind. He's good. He's very talented. I'm not saying he's not talented. But you have to know that if you're up against that story, you're not winning.
Yeah.
You're just not going to. And again, I don't mean to dismiss Cody Lee. He won $1 million. He won the, again, he's very good. I'll play a song from him in a second. But it is, it's got to feel bad when you're going up against someone like that, because what are you supposed to do?
Try again next year.
Right? That's the only thing. And I don't think you can get this far and then try again. I don't think you're able to do that. If you don't qualify for their finalists, I don't think you can do this. So this is Cody Lee. He sang last night some song I'd never heard of.
I said I want to see the world, and you said let's go.
I mean, he's good. Talented. There's no doubt whatsoever. I just kind of thought, and now maybe this is me being a fan of the local, I thought Benicio's better. And this is the first time I heard him sing. And it's weird because he actually played the national anthem. He performed the national anthem at a Sounders game maybe 6 months ago. And we were in the press box. It was me and some other folks who were watching the game. And we all kind of turned to each other like, kid can sing, oh my gosh, and he's just 15 years old, and he looks, by the way, like he's 11. Like, he looks really, really young. This is a better version of a Benicio, I almost called him Del Toro, because of the actor. You don't know who that is? Why are you giving me that look? He's a good actor. I think he's won an Academy Award, but this is not him singing.
They can kick dirt in your face, dress it down and tell you that your place is in the middle, and they hate the way you shine.
Okay, now let hear him hit this note.
Let them fly when they can. Let them spin. Let them scatter in the wind. I've been to the movies. Have seen how it ends.
How does he not win? I want to know. And by the way, because he's singing another local song, that's a Brandi Carlile song, way better than Brandi Carlile.
I'm impressed.
He didn't even make it into the top five.
I don't watch America's Got Talent.
I don't either. So, it's also possible that the other four are way better than he is, so I don't really know. But I find that hard to believe. And by the way, they did kind of blow off an interview that we had with him a couple months ago. I'm not personally blaming him, but I'll never go through that publicist again because it totally ruined my day. But still, he should have won.
Yeah, no.
He should have won. A Cody, good dude.
Great story.
If Cody was really a good dude, you know what he would do? He would donate a portion of the $1 million winnings, whatever's left after taxes, which means we're probably talking about $400,000. You should donate it specifically to Benicio.
Yeah, let him do what he wants with his
money.
This
was his shot.
This is his one shining moment.
No! Share the wealth. That kid is really good, though.
I'm a Cody Lee fan now, just in spite
just
of everything
me.
You just said.
Okay, well, then you're a sellout, because I support the local guys.
Yeah.
You're a sellout.
I'm fine with that.
You go ahead and be your sellout self. I'm going with Benicio.
I'm jumping on the bandwagon.
You're team Cody. I'm team Benicio. 1-800-465-877 if you want to send me a text on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. Go behind the scenes of the show. Follow me on Instagram. Fire up that Instagram app. Search for the screen name Jason Rantz. It's all one word. JSONRANTZ. I'll take you behind the scenes. See what is we look like and what the studio looks like on Instagram. Right now, let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in Trumplandia?
It's a Thursday, which means Washington State Attorney General Bob Ferguson has decided to sue the Trump administration, and it feels like he's suing the Trump administration over something that's already been quasi-settled. Joining us in studio to explain it all, Aaron Granillo, our friend from our sister station, Cairo Radio. Take us through what happened.
Yeah, so this is the Attorney General's 48th lawsuit now.
Wow.
Against the federal government. This one takes aim at the president's plan to fund the southern border wall. Of course, the president has declared a national emergency at the southern border, and because he couldn't get money from Congress to fund the wall.
Well, from Democrats in Congress.
From Congress to fund the wall, he is going he's taking money from military funds, if you will. So there are sort of three buckets of money he's trying to get from. One being military construction projects.
Mm-hmm.
One of those military construction projects is right here in Washington, in Bangor, at the Naval Air Base there that houses submarines. So the Trump administration is looking to take $90 million from the Bangor military construction projects to build piers and do some other maintenance projects there and divert that money for the southern border wall. Attorney General Bob Ferguson says this about that plan.
President Trump can't get the funding he wants from Congress, so he's putting Washington at risk.
And also Washington Governor Jay Inslee, he was there, and he says taking money at this news conference, he says taking money away from the Navy project reduces our national security.
I see these subs going by with dozens of nuclear-tipped missiles. They have to have a place to dock and be maintained, and that's why this Maritime Protection Unit and why the Pentagon has concluded this vital to national security.
Where does he see them swimming on by?
He lives in Kitsap County.
Oh, he just see it. Yeah, okay.
That's what he said. He said he takes this personally because he lives in the county where this naval base is.
It's just reminiscent of I can see Russia from my porch.
Sarah Palin reference there. Yeah. So I did ask the Attorney General's office about recent Supreme Court ruling, which allowed the president
to
use
you can go ahead and do this
Pentagon money. So they're saying, and as I alluded to earlier, there are three buckets of money that the president is targeting. One being just Defense Department money. That alone is what the Supreme Court ruled on earlier. $2.5 billion in Defense Department money is A-OK for the Trump administration to use. Assistant Attorney General Andrew Hughes says this other bucket of money, this $3.6 billion in military construction funds, is entirely separate from the previous ruling.
The Supreme Court stay order from July related to an entirely different bucket of money, an entirely different set of statutes, and an entirely different set of plaintiffs. So that ruling simply has no bearing on our lawsuit today.
And maybe it doesn't, but is there any indication that the Supreme Court is not willing to be just as general in their permission for the Trump administration to at least do this before the case actually gets in front of them?
Yeah, I mean, on the surface, it does seem like there's some precedent to allow.
Seems like a nuisance lawsuit. I mean, if anybody else came out and sued the exact same person 47, 48 times, all of us would be saying, okay, that's an axe to grind.
Yeah. Well, the Attorney General's office likes to tout its what it calls its 21-0 record against the administration, so they're feeling confident about this. Now, of course, it has won 21 cases, but there are other cases that have either been, you know, deferred or...
Yeah, there are ones that he did not win, and so that zero is not really an accurate number, especially having to do with the recent move to say from the migrants coming into this country, you can't just skip over a country and not go ask for asylum at the border and come here. Like, that was given a big win to the Trump administration, and that was something that the Attorney General here was trying to fight. So he's 100% wrong to say he's not lost or had cases deferred 21-0. Shut up. What I think is interesting about this is something that you pointed out. Isn't Bob Ferguson siding with a lawsuit against the military right here in Washington State?
So that case is a little different.
It is different, but he's taking the side against a program.
Yeah, you're talking
for
about
training.
The Navy Growler program.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. So
and the Navy, by the way, the claim coming from activists in the community and Bob Ferguson siding with them is that it's just too noisy and it's become a nuisance.
Essentially.
The Navy says, this is 100% necessary for our training. This is the only space that we can do it. I would argue that that is also about the safety, national security of this country for them to be able to do these tests.
That's a question about environments.
It's
versus,
fine, but it's, again...
Because what Ferguson is saying in that lawsuit specifically is that the Navy did not do a thorough job in its environmental impact statements where it trains over the Olympic Peninsula. But yes, there are some... Yes, there are some inconsistencies there where he is trying to defend the Navy in one instance and then going against it in another.
So as you were at this press conference today, were other reporters kind of pointing out the inconsistency here with the Supreme Court ruling in their new position?
No, I was the only reporter to ask this question. And that
oh,
was the
look
only,
at you.
That was the only response.
A little brag?
That we got. That was not a brag.
I think, no, you should totally brag. You out-questioned everybody else.
Reporting facts, and that was a fact at the news conference.
And I'm saying you should brag about that fact.
Appreciate that.
But what was the tone of the questions that were being asked?
I'll be honest with you. 80% of the questions had nothing to do with this.
Of course.
They were about the Attorney General was sort of teasing the idea that another lawsuit is coming against
shocking, breaking
the
news.
The emissions scandal in California and how they're going to probably join that lawsuit. And then they were also asking the governor about the climate walkouts that are going on tomorrow and just things of that nature.
I do like the idea of Bob Ferguson getting involved with a California lawsuit, a lawsuit that only applies to what's going on in California, but him saying at in the same breath that this is all about protecting Washington State. Washington State is not impacted by that emissions ruling by the Trump administration.
We do, I believe we do follow some of the standards that California
sets. We might
sets,
follow though. Some of the standards, but it has nothing to this was not an act taken against Washington State. It was an act taken against California. And while we follow some of the standards, we don't have the exact same the overzealous nature according to the Trump administration standard of the same emissions ruling. So I just throwing that out there. There's a little bit of mixed messages going on. And this is really about Bob Ferguson not liking the Trump administration's ideology behind their moves. And that's what this is about. We didn't get any of these lawsuits under Obama. I'm guessing we're going to pretend that there were no scandals under Obama. But that's just not the case. So I'm assuming they're all, this is going to work. This is going to be, I'm 22-0 at the end of this one.
That's what they're saying, yes.
Do you think he'll admit if it doesn't go that way? Did you think he'll at least say 21-1?
I can't predict
that. I can predict it. Okay. You can't because you're the fact-based reporter, but I can't. He's going to say nothing.
Okay.
Erin Granillo's got the report right now on her sister website, mynorthwest.com. Erin, thanks for stopping by.
Yeah, happy to do it.
Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The sports ball.
So yesterday, it was the 0-0 draw Sounders with FC Dallas. What are you doing?
I'm giving you your one shining moment.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay, well then yesterday there was a draw. No, 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 no. You just told me I had time.
I thought about it. Once you questioned it, then I pulled it back.
Oh my god.
I figured that if you were questioning it, no, then it just can't happen. If you would have went for it, home run. Would have been all you.
Yeah. God, I hate you. Just the worst. It was still 0-0, and I don't really have that much to say other than I was disappointed in the result. But
yeah,
they did get a point.
Everyone's disappointed by 0-0.
1-800-465-8770.
Still call me.
Mercer Island, Des Moines.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Ranch Show.
Shoreline, Woodinville, Burien.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at the time. 4:30 on a weekday afternoon means it's time for the Big Local, brought to you by Sean Keller Smiles by Design. The Big Local works like this. The media here, hyper-focused on the city of Seattle, so they don't spend all that much time on the communities you live in and care about most. So we do the opposite. We spend all of our time talking about your communities, and we completely ignore the city of Seattle. And we start this afternoon in Oak Harbor, where a drop-in center for the homeless, it's called Spin Cafe, they just lost $100,000 in funding from Island County after they found out that a staff member allegedly was dating a homeless client and another staff member allegedly using drugs. Now, obviously, that's not the best thing for you to have happen at one of these centers. And so the county is saying, look, we can't give money to organizations that are going to do that. Now, management, on their hand, for their part, they're like, yeah, we don't necessarily believe what it is you're claiming, and understand that if you take this much money away from us, you're going to cripple the work that we do. The person who runs Spin Cafe is Vivian Rogers Decker, and she told King 5,
"We were surprised. On a larger community scale, it means that our community loses out in having this resource available to the people in need."
So you've got Spin Cafe serving about 60 homeless or low-income people every single day. But obviously, when you're dealing with allegations like this, the county's not going to be all hip to fund you.
I am concerned about this population. I think the assumption that if you allow people to be in situations where they're potentially exploited by the people who are helping them is doing more harm than good.
Exactly, and they can't be a part of that. That's Island County Commissioner Jill Johnson, who also says, look, we've got rules. If you want to get funding from us, you have to abide by some basic rules like, oh, I don't know, don't do drugs on the premises and don't try to hook up with homeless people that you're serving.
We want them to be able to serve the population, but they have to do it in a way that's safe. We are stewards of public funds, and that means certain expectations have to be met, and we err on the side of the client.
And you know what? Good for her for taking this position, because ultimately we see a lot of government agencies or politicians unwilling to make these types of calls and cut funding to different programs because of the communities they serve, and they think, oh, it's just not going to be a good look. But what's a worse look is getting sued as a result of this by someone who's homeless and then being on the hook potentially to defend to the voters why you decided to continue to give money to an organization that, and again, I presume they believe the allegations are true. Like, that's just not a tenable position. Now, Rogers Decker, the woman who runs this organization, said to King 5 that, look, the county's cuts came with no warning whatsoever and will likely mean we're going to have to let go of two staff members as a result of this. I will recommend the two staff members who you should maybe cut, perhaps the ones who allegedly were either doing drugs or, you know, hooking up, dating a homeless person, which, by the way, was she homeless or he homeless while you were dating them? You couldn't give him a couch to sleep on?
It was too soon in the relationship. That's a big step.
I feel like if you fall in love with someone who happens to be homeless, maybe you're willing to throw the rule book out and just say, hey, I'm developing feelings for you. Why don't you come live with me?
Yeah, there's a timeline that you need to meet.
I mean, fine. All you millennials with your new rules. So I suppose, what are they supposed to do? I mean, simple. If you believe that this is nonsense, continue to challenge it, but then go into the community and ask them to pony up some money. It's only $100,000.
Many of the people, they may or may not know where to find those services. I mean, you're going to have people going hungry.
So that's a woman who's a member of the community. Okay, she clearly cares about the people who are being served. Cough up some money. We're talking about $100,000, not $100 million. This is Island County. There are parts of Island County that can afford to donate, I don't know, let's say $30 or $100 or $200. And before you know it, you go put up a GoFundMe page, and then all across the state, maybe even the country picks up on it, and you've made the money back. Meanwhile, a Renton man kept showing up to Crazy Moose Casino in Mount Lake Terrace. He was there to play high card flush. And he got the attention of the folks there because he kept winning over and over and over again, and then over and over again some more. And it turns out he was winning because he was allegedly cheating. The dude has been caught and charged for cheating the casino out of almost $40,000. He was apparently doing it through sleight of hand, so he's like a magician. except the bad one. Because if you're going to do that, you probably should make it a little less obvious that you're the one who shows up, puts $50 down, and ends up winning like $2,500 over and over and over again. He apparently, according to the court, they say he made 38 trips in 40 days to the tables here. Yeah, got a little greedy. Got a little greedy, sir. Allegedly. The Herald says they started to investigate this dude back in January because they got wind from another pair of casinos that maybe he was up to no good. The Herald says the Washington State Gambling Commission used computer tracking programs to review his wagers, how much he cashed out for, and his win-loss record. A spreadsheet of his moves suggested he'd rarely tried to outwit the same dealer more than twice in a night. But he kept going to the same spot. This is not Las Vegas, where presumably, maybe, just maybe, they're not going to notice this kind of thing, even though they've got cameras everywhere. They say he was first caught cheating to win an extra $1,400 in four bets on December 9th, 2018. They're just quoting from the charging papers. They say the next night he returned and took home $2,500 on a single bet of $50. Charging papers say he cheated three times December 11th, three times December 20th, once December 21st, once December 27th, and again on the 28th, and again on the 30th, and again on the... It just keeps going. But this is my favorite. He apparently, according to the documents, he cheated 11 times on January 8th. That's getting greedy.
You know, it...
I would be so much better at devising a way to screw people out of money.
This is a guy who watched the movie 21 when it came out forever ago and was like, wow,
No one knows that movie.
What?
No one knows 21.
That was a good movie.
It might have been, yes, I remember it being with Kevin Spacey.
Yeah.
Yeah, no one saw that. No one saw that movie. And so it's a movie about, you should have said Rounders.
Because every time I watch 21, I'm like, man, I want to go to Vegas right now. I can do this.
No. Although, I'm going to Vegas in a few weeks. Finally, this is a really scary situation over in College Place near Walla Walla. It's on the east side of the state. A mom ended up turning in her 17-year-old son after she had discovered that he planned to attack his high school, College Place High School. The mom caught wind of his journal somehow. She ended up looking into it, and she found some pretty significant and detailed plans to attack the school on April 20th of 2020. That is the anniversary of the Columbine shootings. So obviously this is a kid who, if all of this is true, if all this is accurate, is a danger to society. And the mother realized that immediately, called the police. They started their investigation. And now they booked this kid into Walla Walla Juvenile Justice Center. They're investigating him on felony harassment and threats to bomb or injure property. The police chief over in College Place, his name is Troy Tamaris. He gave a lot of kudos to the mother. He's quoted as saying, "The mother was very emotional and loves her son. This was not an easy thing to do, but it was the right thing to do. The mother wanted to prevent others from being hurt and wants her son to get the help he needs." Now, you know, that's it's interesting how we talk about issues like this. When we catch the kid before he or she does what they plan to do or what we believe they plan to do, we say this is someone who's in desperate need of mental health. After they've already gone through with the horrific mass shooting, the conversation changes dramatically to how do we punish. And I'm not saying which one is right, but my instinct or my sort of visceral reaction is, how do we punish this kid? Yes, I want to get him the help, but I don't want to just have the conversation of, oh, maybe he's mentally ill. He very well be mentally ill, but we also have to punish this kid. We also have to make sure that we're not just letting him go a little bit quicker because he didn't actually go through with the mass shooting or the bombing or whatever it is he was planning to do in detail. Like, go ahead, give him treatment, but let's make sure that we're 100% sure, or as close to sure as possible, that once he gets out of that treatment, he's not going to revert back and do this kind of stuff. And kudos again to the mother who decided to do something. Now, it's one of those weird things, because I don't necessarily want parents out there who are listening to me to go ahead and read the private journals of your kids. I think that's an incredible breach of trust and privacy, but at the same time, I'm glad that's what she did here. And that's where, you know, sort of the tough nature of being a parent comes into play, where, again, you want to be as respectful to privacy as humanly possible, but in this case, presuming this was not just left open on his desk in his room that she happened to see, she was snooping a little bit, I'm 100% glad that that's what she decided to do. And it's got to be the most difficult phone call to make, is to call the cops on your own kid. who you care very deeply about. But it was the right thing to do, and we should all be grateful that she decided to do that. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show, live in the Online Trading Academy studio. Really do appreciate you tuning in. A bill was not just passed, but signed into law in California by their progressive governor, Gavin Newsom. He decided to support a bill that bans schools from suspending willfully disrupted students. And he's doing this all in the name of social justice. Not just disruptive students, willful defiance. And this happens from K through 8th grade. Now, State Senator Nancy Skinner, the Democrat from Berkeley, she actually wrote this law. She said that it would, quote, keep kids in school where they belong and where teachers and counselors can help them thrive. This bill puts the needs of kids first. It doesn't put the needs of kids first. It puts the needs of willfully disruptive kids first, but it doesn't put the needs of the kids in class disrupted by someone who is willfully defiant. We decide to take these tools out of the toolbox for teachers to use. And part of it is because the truth of the matter is, these politicians in power, though they'll never say it, they just act like it, they do not trust teachers to deal with students because they believe that teachers are racist at heart. That's really what this is about. We've heard the same issue here in Washington State, particularly in Seattle, where the teachers' union say, oh, you know what, this isn't just, we're not just protesting because we want more pay. That's obviously part of it. But we also want to address the social justice issues that matter most because communities of color, students of color, are disproportionately targeted with suspensions and expulsions. Look at the data. Then you look at the data and you're like, yeah, they are, or at least that's what it seems like. Who's suspending them? Well, I mean, we have to. Why do you have to? Well, because they're being willfully disruptive. We got to do something. We got to care about the other kids too. Okay, but you don't have to expel or suspend them. You can kick them out of class, right? Well, I mean, it's not a... We just need more tools to realize that we're racist. Oh, okay. That's what this is about. This is not a good idea. I do believe, generally, that people are too quick to suspend or expel students. I believe that. I think that's wrong. I kind of understand a teacher's perspective when they're dealing with a classroom with a whole bunch of kids. Maybe we're talking about an overcrowded class and you can only give so much attention to the person who's being willfully disruptive. But I do think that schools end up suspending or expelling a little bit too quickly. It does not mean that there is never a situation in which someone should be suspended or expelled simply because they're a seventh grader. Sometimes you do need to suspend that seventh grader. I don't know why we are continuing down this path of telling teachers, you know what, we're not going to give you any power. We just don't trust you. If you don't trust the teacher, get rid of them. If you can't trust a teacher to deal with a kid in his or her, you know, best interest, okay, well, then get rid of that teacher. They shouldn't be in front of kids. But we can't actually say that because that's politically, It's not that it's politically incorrect. It's that teachers get upset when you call them out or really when you ask them to, you know, be responsible for tests that your kids take and don't necessarily do well in. And they really don't like that. So they've got a lot of power. They've got a lot of money that they end up giving to people like Gavin Newsom and Nancy Skinner. So, of course, they're not going to actually say it. But that's how they act. Meanwhile, school districts all across the country, including right here in Washington State, they're being targeted for ransomware attacks. According to Cairo 7 TV, hackers have been recently targeting school systems that store huge amounts of personal data like birth dates and social security numbers or banking and credit card information.
What we've realized is that it's really not a matter of if it will happen. It's more a matter of when.
That's April Mardock. She is a cybersecurity expert for Seattle Public Schools. She says that, hey, Seattle Public Schools getting way more aggressive in the way we treat our cybersecurity threats. And she says, again, it's going to happen. So how do we prepare?
If I get most of them trained, even if it's 1% or less than 1% of them that don't get it, there's still a risk. And I'm rolling dice every day.
Okay, she's rolling dice every day. It's almost like she's setting herself up for an excuse and if something bad happens. Like, hey, we're rolling. I told you it was going to happen. I'm doing my best. Ma'am, you've only helped us with 0.5% of the cybersecurity case. It's happening every day.
Yeah, rolling the dice.
Right, it's rolling the dice, just showing up to work. Let's just cancel school. Let's go back to the time where we don't put anything digital, because it is a government agency anyway. Where these are government operated. You go to the DMV, it's like it's 1963. Let's just go back to that then. Mike Hamilton runs CI Security. That helps school districts protect themselves from hackers. And he says the problem is many school districts just don't have cybersecurity staff at all.
This should be really important to parents. If I can lock up your environment with ransomware, I've had enough access there to where I could also steal information.
The thing is, again, we dealt with this, what was in Sammamish not long ago. I almost don't care. And is that bad for me to say? Like, I just expect it's going to happen. And you guys catch it. The ransomware stuff, generally, if you don't give in, you immediately call the FBI or whomever you're going to call. Call your local authorities. They figure it out. Just don't ever give in. You're not supposed to do any work with it. Don't negotiate with terrorists. And yes, these are terrorists. These are cyber terrorists. If that's what they want to do, that's what they want to do. They usually get caught. And usually, if you handle it the right way and don't freak out and just decide that you're going to pay them, at the end of the day, I feel like all of this stuff kind of just resolves itself. I know that that's a very simplistic and naive way to talk about it. But you know what? I've had my credit card stolen. You know what happens? Literally, I get inconvenienced maybe for 12 hours. It happens. The world we live in. 1-800. Sorry, this is the world. What are you giving me that look for? It's the world we live in. 1-800-465-8770. Text the keyword RANTS, RANTZ, to 1-800-465-8770. I'll tell you how Seahawks fans might be dealing with some homelessness on Sunday. It's the Jason Rantz Show.